The headlines. Thousands of people rally in the French capital, Paris, protest against rising inflation, as the country also grapples with widespread fuel shortage. Tehran urging the U.S. president to stop meddling in its affairs, reaction to Biden's comments on the recent riots in Iran. And in Tunisia, anti-government protesters clash with police forces in the capital city for a second night. Thanks for joining us. Thousands of people are out on the streets in the French capital, Paris, to protest against soaring living costs and climate inaction. Protesters are also pushing against proposed pension reforms, which involve a rise in the retirement age. The demonstration has been called by left-wing political parties, backed by hundreds of associations. France has already been hit by 3 weeks of a refinery strike that has caused fuel shortages across the country. The workers are demanding wage increases to cover inflation and include a share of the huge profits made by oil companies. Several French unions have also announced a national day of strikes on Tuesday. The industrial action is expected to affect road transport, trains, and the public sector. Political commentator John Stepling explains how the people in France are finding it difficult to get by with the ongoing cost of living crisis.
The cost of living has risen so precipitously. The gas prices are amazingly high, even in Scandinavia here. Food prices have risen far beyond anything that's actually even reported. And again, this is true even in a country like Norway. So people are reaching a point where it's not sustainable for them. And winter, of course, is coming, and the prospect of having to heat your house in the winter months, especially in northern European countries, is causing people a great deal of anxiety. And the governments of Europe have no answer for this. In the EU, Ursula von der Leyen just keeps repeating the same sort of mantra about we have to send weapons and money to Ukraine and so forth. Prices are just unrealistically high. I mean, impossible for people to survive if they stay at this level. Impossible for them to heat their homes in winter if they stay at this level. Just literally impossible.
As the energy crisis continues to bite in Italy, people from all walks of life have been staging protests across the country. From students to workers, Italians are urging the next government to put the community back in the center of political discourse and work for peace. Our Italy correspondent Max Civelli has a report.
On Saturday, anti-government rallies and protests were held in the Italian capital. In the morning, high school students took to the streets of Rome to stage a protest that converged on the education ministry. Pupils were demanding more investment in education after what they call two decades of budget cuts and the country recording the highest school dropout levels in the EU. They sent out a warning to the next government, saying Italian schools must be upgraded to be of quality standards.
We are still wondering why the government hasn't scrapped a 2015 school reform. We demand the next executive to put an end to obligatory work placements in the last 3 years of school and to declare a state of emergency for Italy's school buildings.
Later on Saturday, hundreds of people held a demonstration not far from the government building. The initiative was organized by a recently formed anti-system movement called Sovereign and Popular Italy. At the demonstration, people urged the next executive to do more to shield families and companies from surging energy prices and to stop sending weapons to Ukraine and find ways to promote peace internationally.
Vogliamo sottolineare come le menzogne.
We want to stress how the lies told by the mainstream media on the conflict in Ukraine have brainwashed the Italian people. It's NATO who declared war on Russia using Ukraine as a tool. An end must be put on this historical phase made of imperialistic violence and the longing for expansion.
Italia Sovrana Popolare chiede.
Our movement demands the next government to pay in full for people's exorbitant bills and to review the country's foreign policy that is literally plunging our economy into chaos. But I am afraid the next executive will stick to the same line adopted by the outgoing Draghi government.
Italy is in the process to install a new government as the Mario Draghi government collapsed in July, leading to snap elections. The far-right formation Brothers of Italy has emerged as the party garnering the most support from Italians in the vote last month, and its leader Giorgia Meloni is slated to become Italy's next prime minister. More protests were held in Italy over the past days. Earlier this week, operations were suspended for 24 hours at Genoa Airport following a demonstration called by the Ansaldo Energy plant's employees against plans to close the factory. Also, the Italy's largest union, CGL, staged a large demonstration in Rome about a week ago, demanding more protection for workers. A hot autumn of protests and strikes seemed to have just started in the country. Max Civili, Rome.
In the UK, Prime Minister Liz Truss is insisting on her commitment to improve the country's economy as she struggles to save her premiership. In a newspaper article, Truss said that it was, quote, a wrench to have to fire her friend Kwasi Kwarteng as Chancellor of the Exchequer. She noted that the government cannot pave the way to a low-tax, high-growth economy without maintaining the confidence of the markets. Truss has been under fire after she made U-turns on two major policies over next year's budget plan. Her economic proposals adversely affected the market, with the British pound crashing to a record low and the government's repayments on borrowing pushing up. Now some politicians, including those within her Conservative Party, are calling for a resignation. This as the UK has been dealing with the dire cost of living crisis. The Ukrainian military has launched attacks on an administrative building in the eastern city of Donetsk. Officials in the Russian-held region say four people have been wounded as a result. Here's our correspondent Johnny Miller from Donetsk explaining why this new escalation is important.
The center of Donetsk has been hit by Ukrainian artillery. You can hear the sound of explosions across the city. And this strike here is perhaps the most important strike of this morning. It's the central administration building for the city of Donetsk. Now, of course, Ukraine has been shelling Donetsk for months now, indeed intermittently for the last 8 years. When they're not trying to hit military targets, they focus on civilian targets. More often than not, when I get to the site of the explosion, it turns out to be a bus station or a market with bodies lying in the street, or they try to hit water infrastructure or electricity. Up till now, they've generally held off hitting administration centres. Why is that? One reason may well be so as not to provoke the Russians for hitting their decision-making centres in Kiev. But of course, just over a week ago, we had the attack, presumably by Ukrainians, on the Kerch Bridge. And after that, Russia started hitting decision-making centres or widening their parameters of targets in the rest of Ukraine. So this strike here by Ukraine may well be a retaliation in turn for Russia's strikes, a sign here that this war is only going to escalate at the moment as Russia widens its parameters of targets, and Ukraine here in the city of Donetsk does the same.
Iran's foreign ministry reacting to comments by the U.S. president over the wave of riots in the country, calling them meddlesome. The ministry spokesman says Joe Biden is supporting rioters in the tradition of U.S. officials, a move that he's described as fishing in troubled waters. Nasser Kanani says that Biden is frustrated by years of futile action against Iran, adding that his interventions and expressions of surprise won't weaken the country's resolve. Biden has called the Iranian government oppressive, expressing surprise at, using his words, the courage of people and women taken to the streets. Kanani also stressed that Iran is strong enough not to give in to brutal sanctions and hollow threats. He said that Iranians will stand up for their independence and join together to heal wounds, inflicting another defeat on Washington. Tim Anderson is the director of the Center for Counter-Hegemonic Studies. He tells us how various U.S. administrations have done all they could to weaken Iran.
I think it's very well known by now that Washington, whatever the administration is there, whether it's Obama or Trump or Biden, is going to use all of the resources at their disposal to try and weaken, divide, undermine Iran. And every new opportunity will be seized on, basically, because, of course, we know their style of warfare these days is a lot more to do with using proxies, the proxies like the MEK, like the proxies that are in the northern Iraq, like the proxies that are used against Syria, for example, and a constant stream of propaganda to weaken or to confuse their own audiences, principally, basically. I don't think that's really confusing the Iranians, though. It's a long-standing practice of the U.S., and it's emerged in public, and they're not even embarrassed to say it now. They want to starve people, make them desperate, make them rise up against the government, because they know, as they said about Cuba 60 years ago, they said they knew that the Fidel Castro was very popular. The only way for them to try and overthrow the regime there was to make the people desperate and starve. And similarly, you recall Mike Pompeo a few years ago saying that if the Iranian people wanted to eat, they would have to comply with U.S. demands. So it's a very open, direct assault. Of course, it's illegal. It shouldn't be called sanctions. These coercive measures are illegal measures under international law, but they are specifically designed to make people desperate and try and divide people.
Investigative report by the Iranian parliament has concluded that the death of 22-year-old Mahsa Amini was not due to assault and battery. According to the report, the young woman was assaulted neither during her transfer to the police station nor while being held there. The findings, however, question the effectiveness of the first medical response that she received. The report says the crowd amassing outside of the police station delayed her transfer to the hospital. The parliament report has called on those who jumped to conclusions about the cause of Amini's death to correct their position or face prosecution. It says the U.S., Israel, and their followers took advantage of such hasty judgments to stir up unrest. Days ago, the Iranian coroner's office also announced that Amini's death was not due to blows to her head or any of her vital organs, but due to cerebral hypoxia and multiple organ failures. Amini died after 3 days in intensive care. Her death triggered a wave of riots in Iran. The Iranian judiciary says four inmates have died of smoke inhalation in a blaze that occurred at Tehran's Evin prison. According to judiciary officials, the four victims were serving time for theft. 61 prisoners were injured while 70 others were rescued when the fire broke out late on Saturday. 51 received outpatient treatment. 10 others are in the hospital, four in critical condition. Officials say the blaze started at the prison's sewing workshop after a number of prisoners got into a fight. Meanwhile, security forces say that they prevented an attempted jailbreak by some of the inmates serving time for violent crimes. The situation at the penitentiary has now returned to normal. Lebanon says Israeli gunboats have violated its territorial waters several times near Ras Nakura. The Lebanese army says the gunboats intruded several hundred meters into Lebanese waters on four occasions. The army says the authorities were discussing the violations with the UN peacekeeping mission in Lebanon. The news comes 3 days after Lebanon approved a U.S. brokered maritime deal with Israel, which allows the Arab country to conduct offshore gas production in the Mediterranean. The deal brought an end to a dispute mainly over the Karish gas field claimed by both sides. Hezbollah resistance movement had warned Israel against exploiting the country's offshore gas reserves before reaching an agreement with Lebanon. The situation remains tense in Tunisia, where anti-government protesters have clashed with police forces in the capital city for a second night. Riot police fired tear gas to disperse crowds of demonstrators who threw stones and petrol bombs at the security forces. Tunisia has been battling an intense political crisis since President Kais Saied seized power and dissolved parliament last year. Earlier on Saturday, two rival opposition groups staged one of the biggest protests so far against the president. They denounced his moves to consolidate political power and accused him of mishandling the economy. Tunisians are struggling to make ends meet, with a crisis in state finances contributing to shortages of subsidized goods such as fuel. China's president says that his government is committed to peaceful reunification with Taiwan, but might have to use force if necessary. Xi Jinping rejected any forms of separatism and interference over the self-ruled island, which China considers as part of its territory. Beijing is strongly opposed to Washington's military ties with Taiwan, calling the U.S. military presence in the region provocative. Xi also pointed out that Beijing is against the Cold War mentality in international politics and interference in other countries' internal affairs. He also praised the current stable conditions in Hong Kong, which he said has made a transition from chaos to governance. He insisted that Hong Kong must be ruled by patriots, reaffirming 2020 legislation that bans non-patriots from positions of political power in the city. Xi was addressing the 5-yearly Congress of the ruling Communist Party. And that is rural news.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
U.S. President Joe Biden's incorrect performance in the field of foreign, domestic, and economic policy has caused his popularity to drop extensively. President Biden's approval rating has remained below 50% since August of 2021, a warning sign that his Democratic Party could lose control of at least one chamber of the U.S. Congress in the November 8 midterm elections. Thus, Republicans are expected to achieve victories in the midterm elections this November. If they take control of the U.S. House of Representatives, more than two-thirds of them believe that Joe Biden should be impeached. We take a look at some of the world media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. MSNBC, an American news-based television channel based in New York, has this to say. U.S. Republicans hoping to seize control of the House of Representatives this November are already setting their sights on what is, for many of them, a top priority next year: impeaching the current president, Joe Biden. A number of rank-and-file conservatives have already introduced impeachment articles in the current Congress against President Biden. Those resolutions never had a chance of seeing the light of day, with Democrats holding a narrow control of the lower chamber. But with Republicans widely expected to win the House majority in the midterm elections, many of the same conservatives wanted to tap their new potential powers to oust the president they deem unfit. Some would like to make it a first order of business. The article quoted a variety of GOP lawmakers and their spokespersons, including Representative Bob Good of Virginia, insisting that the Democratic president should be impeached for intentionally opening the U.S. border with Mexico, despite the fact that this has never happened in reality. As regular leaders may recall, this isn't altogether new. One of the first Republican lawmakers to broach the subject of impeaching Joe Biden was Iowa Senator Joni Ernst, who raised the prospect 2 years ago, long before the Delaware Democrat had even secured his party's nomination. The GOP senator, Joni Ernst, said at the time that the impeachment door has been opened, and pointed to conspiracy theories about Burisma, a holding company, and Ukraine. Also, after Joe Biden's inauguration, several House Republicans filed articles of impeachment against the Democratic president, and earlier this year, Republican Senator Ted Cruz of Texas added that he believed the Republican-led House would likely consider impeaching Joe Biden on multiple grounds. Senator Ted Cruz added a few weeks ago that in the wake of the FBI's Mar-a-Lago search, the pressure to impeach Joe Biden is going to be enormous. Representative Jim Jordan, a Republican position to the chair of the House Judiciary Committee, has said he wants to see his party at least begin a conversation about impeaching President Biden. The Hill has more on this story. At least 8 resolutions to impeach Joe Biden have been offered since he took office. 3 related to his handling of the migrant surge at the southern border with Mexico, 3 targeting his management of the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan last year, 1 denouncing the eviction moratorium designed to help renters during the pandemic, and still another connected to the overseas business dealings of his son, Hunter Biden. Those proposals will expire with the end of this Congress, but some of the sponsors already vowing to revisit them quickly next year. Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, a Republican from Georgia, the lead sponsor of 4 of the impeachment resolutions, is among them. Nick Dyer, a Green spokesman, said recently in an email, Marjorie Taylor Greene believes Joe Biden should have been impeached as soon as he was sworn into office. So, of course, she wants it to happen as soon as possible. A noisy impeachment push for the GOP's right flank could create headaches for Representative Kevin McCarthy of California, the Republican leader in line to be Speaker of the House, and other party brass just as the 2024 presidential cycle heats up. Another strategy GOP leaders may adopt is to impeach a high-ranking member of the administration, but not the president himself. Several resolutions have been introduced to do just that, separately targeting Vice President Kamala Harris, the Secretary of State Anthony Blinken, the Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas, and Attorney General Merrick Garland. The British newspaper The Guardian has also covered the same story. A rare anti-Trump Republican congressman predicted US Republicans will try to impeach Joe Biden every week if they retake the House of Representatives this November. Remembering repeated attempts to defund the Affordable Care Act under Barack Obama, Adam Kinzinger of Illinois said, "That's going to look like child's play in terms of what Marjorie Taylor Greene is going to demand of Kevin McCarthy." Kinzinger added, they're going to demand an impeachment vote on President Biden every week. Adam Kinzinger was speaking to David Axelrod, a former Obama advisor, on his Axis File podcast. Kinzinger is one of 2 Republicans on the House committee investigating the Capitol attack that Donald Trump incited. He will retire this November. The other Republican, Liz Cheney of Wyoming, lost her primary to a Trump-backed challenger. Marjorie Taylor Greene from Georgia is among far-right Republicans who have already introduced or threatened impeachment articles against Joe Biden on issues including the COVID pandemic, immigration, Afghanistan, and misdemeanor of Biden's son, Hunter Biden. Adam Kinzinger added, I think it will be a very difficult majority for him to govern unless he just chooses to go absolutely crazy with them, in which case you may see the rise of the silent, non-existent, moderate Republican that may still exist out there, but I don't know. Democrats impeached Donald Trump twice. Adam Kinzinger voted against the first impeachment over the blackmail of Ukraine for political purposes, but for the second over the Capitol attack. He told David Axelrod he regretted the first vote. 9 other House Republicans voted for Donald Trump's second impeachment, making it the most bipartisan in history. At trial in the Senate, 7 Republicans found Trump guilty, but that was not enough for a conviction. Discussing Adam Kinzinger's work on the January 6th committee, David Axelrod pointed to a recent opinion poll which said 72% of Republican voters still back Donald Trump's lie about election fraud and say Joe Biden is not the legitimate president of America.
Ocean of Dua.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we'll have a glance at Kumail's supplication and we'll discuss a commentary on that. We'll be back in a few seconds, so stay tuned.
فبعزتك يا سيدي ومولاي أقسم صادقا لئن تركتني ناطقا لأضجن إليك بين أهلها ضجيج الآملين ولأصرخن إليك صراخ المستصرخين ولأبكين عليك بكاء
Brothers and sisters, dear listeners, we were discussing this part of the Divine Kumail supplication. فَبِعِزَّتِكَ يَا سَيِّدِي وَمَوْلَاي أُقْسِمُ صَادِقًا. So by your might, my master and my protector, I swear sincerely. If you leave me with speech, لَإِن تَرَكْتَنِي نَاطِقًا, I will lament before you from the midst of the fire's inhabitants with the lamentation of the hopeful. لَأَضِجَّنَّ إِلَيْكَ بَيْنَ أَهْلِهَا ضَجِيجَ الْآمِلِينَ, I will cry to you with the cry of those who are crying for help. لَأَصْرُخَنَّ إِلَيْكَ صُرَاخَ الْمُسْتَصْرِخِينَ, and I will weep before you with the weeping of the bereft. وَلَأَبْكِيَنَّ عَلَيْكَ بُكَاءَ الْفَاقِدِينَ وَلَأُنَادِيَنَّكَ أَيْنَ كُنْتَ يَا وَلِيَ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ, I will call upon you, where are you, O the sponsor of the believers? يَا غَايَةَ أَمَالِ الْعَارِفِينَ, O the goal of the hopes of the knowers. About this very phrase, يَا غَايَةَ أَمَالِ الْعَارِفِينَ, in the previous episode, started discussing the recognition of the Almighty Allah. We discussed how important it is to know the one to whom we are turning our requests. We said that we have the concept of recognition in our traditions, and there are many traditions that are replete with the importance of role of the supplicant's awareness of the object of prayer and of the one who is asked from in the acceptance of prayer. In one of his supplications, Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam says, "You have lauded yourself for having no need for your creatures, and it suits you to have no need of them. You have attributed to them poverty, and it suits them to be poor towards you. So he who strives to remedy his lack through what is with you, and wishes to turn poverty away from himself through you, has sought his need in the most likely place and come to his request from the right quarter. In fact, Imam Ali alayhi salam, the one whose words we are reading and explaining right now, says in a whispered prayer, "Immaculate is he on whom relies every believer, and of whom every denier is in need. No one can become needless except by the grace of what is with him." This is what Imam Ali alayhi salam has believed in. This is one only part of a true irfan, true cognizance of the Lord. Ya ghayata amal al-arifin. You, the sponsor of the believers, you, the goal of the hopes of the Noors.
Oh my Lord, I swear by your honor that if you will grant me speech in hell, I shall amongst its inmates cry out bewailingly unto you, like the cry of those who have faith in your kindness and compassion. And I shall mourn for you the lamentation of those who are bereaved, and I shall keep on calling unto you. Where are you, O friend of the believer?
Thank you, Allah, God, let me hear, feeling so good about all the things that we went through, knowing that God is pleased with us too. It's not a dream, this is so true, and we know we'll be here forever. The feeling is indescribable, knowing that this is our reward.
The ocean of dua.
So, about this recognition or ma'rifah of the Almighty Allah, we must say that one part of recognition is that a supplicant should know that Allah is near to him, nearer than any other thing, and that he, subhanahu wa ta'ala, is aware of what his soul tempts him to do, not just what he does, not of his deeds, even what he is tempted by his soul within. This supplicant, the believer, must know that he, subhanahu wa ta'ala, is nearer to him, even closer than his jugular vein, and that he, subhanahu wa ta'ala, intervenes between him and his self. Allah says in the Holy Quran, "And when my servants ask you about me, tell them that I am indeed near most." وَإِذَا سَأَلَكَ عِبَادِي عَنِّي فَإِنِّي قَرِيبٌ أُجِيبُ دَعْوَةَ الدَّاعِي إِذَا دَعَانِ. And also the verse that says, "نَحْنُ أَقْرَبُ إِلَيْهِ مِنْ حَبْلِ الْوَرِيدِ." We are nearer to him than his jugular vein. Imam Ali alayhi salam says elsewhere in another supplication, "I seek your proximity through your embracing mercy, which has embraced all things. My Lord, indeed you see my position. You are aware of what is with my conscience, and you know my innermost secret. O Lord, nothing of my affairs is hidden from you. You are closer to me than my jugular vein." This is not just a mere word. This is not just a mere supplication. It is supplication from bottom of the heart. It is supplication that arises from belief in truly who the Almighty Allah is. Do you believe that the Almighty Allah is the absolute cause? Do you believe that He is the one to rescue you were there no one on the earth? If that is so, you can claim to be you are truly supplicating to Him. Ya ghayata amal al-arifin, ya ghiyath al-mustaghithin. Oh, the goal of the hopes of your knowers, and O aid of those who seek assistance. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us in this episode. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parstoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
Voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The global transition from unipolar world order to a multipolar one has now become the gospel truth, with China ascending globally and Russia challenging the West forcefully. But how Muslims can secure a front row seat in this once-in-a-century transition? Leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, answered this strategic question in his recent speech before Muslim scholars participating in a pro-unity conference held by Iran. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned, please. Kayhan, international staff writer, wrote, "When the leader of the Islamic Revolution calls the Islamic Republic of Iran is a mighty, unshakable tree, he is not exaggerating. As a matter of fact, he is speaking the undeniable truth, as the avowed enemies of the Iranian people very well know from their string of failures of the past 43 years, during which they have always ended up in a state of dizziness with badly bruised heads bleeding from the hits received from the twigs of the firmly rooted tree. The mighty, unshakable tree of the Islamic Republic, whose steadily growing branches ensure the security and welfare of the Iranian people, in addition to providing shade for the independent governments, movements, and people of the region, has foiled the American bids to invade, hatch coups, impose a war, murder scientists and senior military commanders, unleash the most macabrely murderous terrorists in such friendly countries as Syria, Iraq, and Afghanistan, illegally freeze assets, clamp economic sanctions, and instigate characterless men and women to indulge in scattered cases of urban terrorism." Washington is totally wrong in thinking the outcasts of the society with no roots in either Islamic faith or Iranian culture, and who cannot even be called humans in view of their desecration of sanctities, obscene sloganeering, and indecent attire, can axe at least a few branches of this giant tree. And there is another question here. How can a country nurtured by sacred blood of martyrs and flourishing on the faith and dedication of scores of millions of Iranian Muslim men and women, active in all spheres of society, be overrun and handed over to the minions of the US, Britain, France, and the fake regime of Israel? Revolution requires roots to triumph and continue its triumphant course, as the dedicated Iranian Muslim masses have constantly shown from 1978 till this date, helping the country achieve spectacular success in all fields, including medicine, modern science and technology. No wonder the leader of the Islamic Revolution, at the mention of whose name the U.S. and its comrades in crimes shake in fear, has called the Islamic Republic of Iran a mighty, unshakable tree. Also, Tehran Times wrote this headline saying, "Unity key to sublime position in a changing world," the leader of the Islamic Revolution said. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei has explained how Muslims can secure a sublime position in a world in transition. The global transition from unipolar world order to a multipolar one has now become the gospel truth, with China ascending globally and Russia challenging the West forcefully. But how Muslims can secure a front row seat in this once-in-a-century transition? Ayatollah Khamenei answered this strategic question in his recent speech before Muslim scholars participating in a pro-unity conference held by Iran. The 36th International Islamic Unity Conference was held in Tehran with Iranian President Ayatollah Sayyid Ebrahim Raisi as the key speaker. The participants of the conference, the heads of the three branches of government, including judiciary, executive, and legislative, and a group of government officials, met with Ayatollah Khamenei on the occasion of the birth anniversaries of Prophet Muhammad and Imam Sadiq. In his speech, the leader spoke about the character of Prophet Muhammad, saying, "The Holy Prophet's character is unique in the entire universe. His birthday is a very important, great day, calling the birthday of the Prophet, and it is not just for holding a celebration and commemorating him. It is also for learning from him and setting the Prophet as an example." He said, according to a readout of the speech put out by the website of Khamenei.ir, "One of the lessons from Prophet Muhammad for the Islamic nation is the Prophet grieves for your suffering. Of course, this doesn't just refer to Muslims at the time of the Prophet. It means the sufferings of the Muslims in Palestine, Myanmar, etc. today grieve his pure soul." Ayatollah Khamenei then addressed the suffering of present-day Muslims and linked it to global imperialism. "Global imperialism rejoices at the suffering of Muslims. Why are Muslim nations suffering like this? Why are the Muslims suffering economically, politically, and from aggression, colonialism, civil wars, etc.? One of the most important reasons is the division of Muslims," he said, adding, "The Muslim nation's current sufferings are due to their division. This is what happens when we are divided, not concerned about each other, and even hostile to each other at times. The Quran says, when you are divided, you will be humiliated. Thus, you will help others to dominate you."
Thank you.
The leader of the Islamic Revolution also pointed to how the enemy sows division among Muslims. He said the enemy does not want to see Muslims united. Instead, it wants them disunited. Furthermore, the enemy planted Israel in the region to serve as a base for the West. According to the leader, the enemy wants the opposite of unity between Muslims today. They created a cancerous cell in the region, the Zionist regime, to serve as a base for Western enmity against Islam. They brought the murderous, brutal Zionists to oppressed Palestine, creating a fake government to do this. In this context, the leader addressed the trend of normalization between Israel and some Arab states. He said normalization with Israel is an act of treason. The enemies are working to do something so that the Zionist regime, this cancer cell, won't be called the enemy anymore. They wish to create more discord between the countries of the region. These normalizations are one of the biggest acts of treachery against Muslims, the leader said. Since 2020, some Arab states, namely Bahrain, Morocco, the United Arab Emirates, and Sudan, have moved to establish full diplomatic relations with the fake regime of Israel, despite warnings from Iran and discontent in Arab public opinion.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, self-refinement. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome everyone. You're listening to IRB English Radio. And this is A to Z program. I'm your host, Hussein Hinzano. Now, in today's lesson, we are going to talk about self-refinement. Now, self-refinement is like evacuation, you know, doing tahliyeh, separating yourself from a few issues in order to know to bring about a good self, separating yourself from a few issues in order for you to become a better person or to deal in a good manner. False beliefs and superstitions are ignorance and deviations that result in self-darkness and deviation from following the straight path of perfection and God's nearness, of perfection and God's nearness. Because the believers in false beliefs never recognize the straight path of human perfection. And, you know, they start wander aimlessly and confused in the darkness, valleys of deviation and vices, never reaching to their undefined final destination. So how come the heart, which is full of intense darkness, can witness the ever-shining sacred divine illumination? Also, the moral indecencies strengthen the animalistic habits, gradually silencing the light within the celestial human soul. Now, such a deviated person will never succeed in accomplishing the most exalted human objective of reaching the nearness of the supreme source of beauty and absolute perfection. One of the examples is like the God Almighty. He's not going to be close to them. So definitely a human being needs self-refinement in life in order for him to plan and to make his life in a planned manner in a way he can be closer to God than being far. Self-refinement is one of the antiviruses of the many problems that we face in our lives.
Allah, 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 Allah.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir. La ilaha illallah.
Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z program from the IRB English Radio. In today's lesson, we are talking about self-refinement, like it's evacuation, making yourself free for something good. Now, similarly, shining and transgressions make the human self dark and contaminated, thus causing him further to deviate from the exalted path of human perfection and God's nearness. Naturally, such a person will never reach to its ultimate cherished goal. Therefore, self-refinement determines our final destination and should be considered as an extremely important matter. We must therefore first identify the moral indecencies and sins, and then, after that, we do our best and take actions and take like remedial actions for cleansing and purifying ourselves from these impurities. Now, fortunately, in the first part, we do not have any problem because the physicians of the self or God's assigned human specialists, like the prophets and the infallible imams, they have done what? They have counted various kinds of sins and taught us how to relinquish them. We all recognize moral indecencies and understand their ugliness. Now, thank you so much for listening to this show. We're hoping that next time you're going to make sure you're going to do your best and do some self-refinement. Check on what you're supposed to be doing. Correct it. Make yourself free. Evacuate yourself. Let yourself be evacuated in a way it brings in good and puts away what is bad, so that we could reach our best self. We can reach the level of having our best self and being much closer to God and Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Thank you so much for listening to the show. Until next episode, inshallah. Fi amanillah. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Thank you.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.